So, who are you?
I'm Daniel Pearson. I work as a lead in product support for Windows.
Okay, product support for Windows. Big product.
It is. A lot of code coverage there, a lot of different areas. So our team's actually split into three areas.
Okay.
So I work in the base OS team. And on top of that, we also have DS, Active Directory, and also for networking as well.
So you're here to talk to us about how to debug Windows. Some of the things, the tips, tricks, and the knowledge you've gleaned.
That's right. We get a lot of customer calls. Customers coming in with different issues.
Yeah.
The common problems with Windows is bug checking.
So okay.
The blue screen of death, commonly known as.
Yes.
So I have some demos that we'll go through.
Yeah.
Some of that.
Do you want to start with the demo? Like you had mentioned, walking through a blue screen of death and how to actually fix and debug and understand what's going on. So maybe just to set the tone. So let's talk about blue screen of death and some of the things that PSS knows about, say, Watson reports.
All right. So there's when we look at like the blue screens, there's probably like four common reasons like why a box would bug check
mm-hmm.
a blue screen. So the first one is and the most common problem is an unhandled exception. Device mm-hmm. driver. So normally in user mode you'll see these as like an access violation. So in Windows, because user mode processes are separated, if an application or process goes and access violates, it only takes out itself, it doesn't take out the rest of the operating system.
Sure.
In kernel mode, the rules are completely different. So we have device drivers running there. These are trusted components and they have access to the full address range of the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be careful when you install these. That's why you'll see with like Windows 2000, we introduced the ability to go ahead and we'll prompt the user or the administrator when they're installing a device, especially if the device is not signed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to warn the administrator that they're potentially installing untrusted code and that it could impact the stability of the system. So as I said, like with the bug checks, that it could be because of an unhandled exception. So this is basically just you playing with like wrong pointers and things like that in your devices.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the device drivers have the ability to go ahead and explicitly bug check the system themselves. So we have
a
bunch of code built into various components, like inside the kernel,
mm-hmm.
also in file system drivers such as NTFS and things like that. So for example, if NTFS detects that there's some kind of corruption on the volume, and that going ahead and committing those changes would cause some kind of instability, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and we'll bug check. And that way we have some evidence left over so we can actually go back and find out what's gone wrong. So we actually export that API in the kernel. So there's a KE bug check EX. And device drivers, if need be, go ahead and call that bug check.
And where are these tools? Are they built into Windows, or is there a resource SDK you have to download? Is it platform SDK?
So you get these from the device drivers kit.
Okay.
And so there's links.
DDK?
Yeah, so I think it's like the WDK now or something.
Okay.
Like that. So you can get those from, if you go to Microsoft.com/WHDC, there'll be a link to those kits there. So there's a free download, and so people who are developing device drivers can use those tools.
Okay. Cool. So you're going to walk us through crashing Windows on purpose.
Sure. Yeah. So what I do is I have a test here. So I have a device driver that I've written that goes ahead and performs some illegal functions.
Okay.
And we'll go through and we'll see how we can actually, from using the built-in tools in Windows, and also using external tools, the debuggers, we'll go through and see how we can actually diagnose the cause of the crash.
Sure. And did you want to whiteboard how the crash is going to happen, and then we can go into the demo, or do you want to do that while you're crashing? Or I'll leave it up to you.
Sure. Okay. So what we have is in Windows we have two modes. So we have user mode and we have kernel mode.
Mm-hmm.
So kernel mode is effectively what we have is we have the kernel, and so this is basically contained inside a binary NTOS kernel. .exe, which is NTOS here. Below that we have what's known as the HAL, so the hardware abstraction layer. And also we have various other components, such as device drivers. So these don't necessarily need to be devices to be tied to physical hardware devices.
Mm-hmm.
So AV vendors, for example, install device drivers. And the reason is because they can actually get callbacks from the kernel. So they can actually go ahead and at certain points, for example, when they install themselves, they can get when we're trying to open a file, when we're trying to like close a file. So it can do various like A/B scans and things like that.
So what's an example? Like, is this Norton, McAfee, all the big major?
All of those AVs, yeah. So we publish, we actually publish how they can go ahead and use these callbacks, and so they can basically build these filter drivers.
Okay.
Also tools like the sysinternals tools, so Regmon, FileMon, basically all those go ahead and install device drivers as well. And so what they do is they basically send that data back up. So they all use callbacks to get information about like the, from registry callbacks and file system callback.
Okay.
So basically what I'm going to do is I have a user mode application to control this. So I'm going to go ahead when I run that. So we have my user mode application running up here. So user mode applications can't cause a system to bug check. Any cause of a bug check is down here. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons as well is it could be potentially because of a hardware problem as well. And that's a common problem. So what we've seen is some of the feedback that we get through the system is that like 70% of all of these bug checks are caused by third party.
So 70% are third party, meaning not Microsoft.
Correct, that's right.
Okay.
So every time each of these bug checks that are sent to Microsoft go through some kind of automated analysis, and so these figures are from that, 15% of that code is, we can't determine the cause, possibly due to like corruption,
okay.
Things like that. The bug check I'm going to show you, the first one, would fall into that bucket. And that's because we're going to go ahead and we're going to cause some like pool corruption, like memory corruption.
Okay.
10% is hardware problems. So we can clearly see that there's issues with the CPU and things like that. Actually, just go ahead and they cause like incorrect data to be sent.
Okay.
Or various things. And then finally, 5% of that data is of those bug checks is problems with our code.
Okay.
And so we see like a very, very small number of those.
Awesome.
So I think in the 2 years that... I've been looking at these bug checks here. I've seen like one that's come through that's been from a Microsoft component.
Okay, so only one,
so,
huh?
Yeah, so that was so it's quite a high number. So almost all of them are third-party or hardware problems.
And when you get involved, at what stage? Is it an ISV calling you that they have problems? Is it a customer sending stuff? Or are you... Is it like somebody calling or you're on-site? Or is it one of those... situations where you're looking at things that get reported into bug check?
So the division I work in product support, we work with what's known as premier customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like our largest customer base. So the traditionally IT pros, so systems administrators, so they'll be running like Exchange servers and things like that, file and print.
Mm-hmm.
And these boxes will be bug checking. And so they're going to want some kind of analysis from that. And so we'll go ahead and we'll perform the analysis.
Okay.
And we'll give them the results. So if it's a problem with our own code, if we have a known fix for it, like a hot fix, we can forward that on to the customer. Or then we work and try and diagnose the issue, and we work with our sustained engineering team to go ahead and create a hot fix to fix that problem. Or if it's a third party, then we can actually go ahead and just do an analysis for the customer and have send that to them, and then they can then engage the third party, the OEM or the ISV, and provide them with that data and also with any evidence that's left with the operating system that we recommend. I'll show you some of that
in
this demo.
Cool.
Okay, so primarily what we're going to have in the demos is going to have a user mode application.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm going to do, go ahead and do is, because I'm an administrator on the system, I have mm-hmm. the ability just to install device drivers. So I'm basically just going to go install a device driver running down here in kernel mode. And so what I'm going to be able to do is, as I said, user mode applications can't cause the system to bug check. It's only what's happening down here in kernel mode. But what I can do is I can send I/O controls down, and actually user mode applications can ask drivers to perform different tasks.
Sure.
So in my device driver, I have an iOcto that's basically sitting there, which when it receives a command, will go ahead and cause like pool corruption. So I'm just going to basically, I'll have a dialog box here, we'll click on that, send it, it'll send the control, and so then my device driver will go ahead and perform this function.
Okay, so when you talk about pool corruption, what does that mean? Why don't you draw it on the board if you can?
All right. So we have two types of memory. Mm-hmm. So in user mode, when we talk about memory, we talk about heap. When we mm-hmm. talk about memory in kernel mode, we talk about pool.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, because each process in user mode is isolated, so it has a separate heap, mm-hmm. whereas kernel memory, because these devices and the operating system share one area of the system, it basically it's one basic pool. So we're able to allocate from different areas. But essentially, any device driver here can read and write from any memory location on the system.
Right, right. So it's effectively the device driver is going to read memory that it shouldn't or write to memory that it shouldn't?
Correct. So what's going to happen in this example is I'm going to basically go ahead and what we can do is I can break it down and show a little bit how the memory manager works.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So what happens with the memory manager is the memory manager breaks down memory into what's known as a page. So on a x86 box, the default or the size for a page is 4 kilobytes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the memory manager does, it goes and takes this 4K page, and then it needs to go and break that up. So it'd be highly inefficient if every time a device, say, for example, it needed to go and store 32 bytes of data, that we would go and give it a page and then not reuse that. So what we do is the memory manager is highly efficient with the way that it goes and dishes out these requests. So say, for example, driver A, so we have A.sys. So driver A comes along and says, okay, I want to use 100 bytes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it goes and requests 100 bytes from the memory manager. And so what the memory manager does is it finds a free spot. So say, for example, the start of the page. So we have a small number of bytes, 8 bytes that we leave at the front. It basically just contains some header information. So it actually tells us the size of the previous page. Oh, sorry, the size of the previous allocation and the size of the next allocation.
Okay.
So we can actually go ahead and we can walk this structure to actually find out if these devices are actually doing things that they shouldn't do. So if I go ahead and I've gone and said, okay, I need 100 bytes,
mm-hmm.
and the memory manager comes back and says, okay, this is like the address that you can use, and I go ahead and I write my 100 bytes worth of data, and say that it ends up here, so we stop at this point.
Sure.
If I go and write 100 bytes, well, that's fine. Okay. So any other devices can come along and ask, or the operating system. So say, for example, we have B.sys. So B.sys comes along, and it goes and asks for another 100 bytes as well. So memory manager will say, okay, there's a free spot here, so we'll fill this in with our header, and we'll go ahead and we'll go and allocate that. So then the device can actually come along and use that.
Sure.
So everything's fine, so all we do is we tightly pack these together because it makes this a lot more efficient.
Sure,
so
sure.
We basically go ahead and use up all these pages. When these pages are no longer available, we'll go ahead and memory manager will take more of those pages. We'll just basically keep building up this chain. And so what actually happens in this example is, and this is a common problem, is with an overrun. And so say, for example, that A has gone ahead and made and asked for the allocation, has been given back their address, and hasn't yet written to that.
Mm-hmm.
B comes along and says, okay, I want to make my allocation. And makes the allocation and gets given back the address. What happens is everything's fine, as I said, if A goes and writes 100 bytes. If A tries to write more than 100 bytes,
mm-hmm.
what actually happens is it starts writing past this point and it ends up writing into the address.
Into the header.
Yeah.
And past into B's address space.
Into B's, this piece of pool of B's that it was going to use. Mm-hmm. So you can potentially go ahead and corrupt like various like structures.
Okay.
So one of the things is because we don't do so much detection under kernel mode, because all these devices are trusted components, so there's not a lot of probing that goes on. So we probe things that are sent from user mode, but when kernel mode code is calling into other APIs, we assume they know what they're doing. So
right.
It's very, very few checks. So basically at this point, we could be lucky, and this is what we find a lot of the times, that this doesn't happen straight away. It takes a while for us to try and detect this kind of problem, because it might be that B's actually finished with that data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that actually might just get reused. So it's quite possible that nothing happens. But what could potentially happen is that B could come along and read this data, expect it to be in a certain format.
Sure.
It knows about its data structures and says, okay, this is a pointer to this location where I stored something else.
Right.
So it goes and reads these number of bytes here and actually tries to do some arithmetic with that. And
sure, sure.
Because that data could be anything. It could be a string or whatever. And so then it actually goes and causes an unhandled exception. And so the kernel will trap that and then go ahead and bug check the box.
Okay.
So when we initially look at it, we would think that B is the cause of this, purely because it was it.
Because B is throwing an unhandled exception.
Correct. Well, the operating system detected that, but B is not dealing with that condition. But when we drill down, we actually find that A is the cause.
Okay, and so when you said the machine goes into bug check mode, what does that mean exactly? Are we gonna see that?
Yeah, so the machine actually, the machine will blue screen. So as I said, like, this could be, like...
So bug check mode is the nice way to say blue screen.
Yeah, that's, like, the internal term that we use. Oh, okay. API is, like, KE bug check EX.
Got it.
Okay. So what I have here, as I said, I just have my user mode application. So I'm just going to open it up. So what that's done, it's gone ahead now, and it's gone and loaded a device driver. And so that's sitting there running in kernel mode, and now it's waiting for a device control.
And we're actually doing this on a virtual PC as well.
That's correct.
Just to be clear. Yep. Okay.
So I'm just going to go ahead and just hit the corrupt button. So that's gone ahead and that's gone and done it once. Okay, so exactly what my driver's done is actually gone ahead and it said it's going to go and write 2K worth of data. It's actually gone and written a lot more. And so first time you can see nothing happen, we were able to get away with it.
Sure.
I could go ahead and click like several more times and we'll still see the system's like stable.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what's happening under the hood, though, is that we are actually going and corrupting data structures. So as I said, sometimes I do this, like, very first time, it could bug check. Sometimes it takes a lot of other times.
And this is the challenge with making bugs reproducible, where somebody doesn't know what the cause is, if you will, because unless B tries to access something or...
Correct.
Even if you write bad code could still work.
Exactly. And so systems we see that have, like, because we have, like, large systems now have a lot more address space.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see that when we have these like large pools of memory, that because device drivers are a lot more, they use a lot less, they're a lot smarter about the way they do these allocations, we might not necessarily hit these limits or not hit these problems. So the system could be running for days or potentially weeks before you actually see
the corruption happen.
Yeah, so the corruption could be happening all along, but we don't actually see the results of it.
Right.
Or we see any problems. It could be potentially corrupting your data in the background, and you don't know, so you could actually find the data being written to the disk is not right and things like that. So it's definitely something you want to try and diagnose quickly.
For sure.
So you see I've gone ahead and I'm corrupting and nothing's actually happened. So I'm just going to go ahead and just like try and kick off some applications. And so you see I went and fired off the first one there.
There we go.
My machine went and bug checked. So what I've done is we'll see here we have some information. So it tells us we have some generic data. That's all this data is stored in the kernel.
Sure.
So we work out based on the type of bug check, and we display certain information. So we can actually find out more about this later. So what's important to note here is we see down the coming down the bottom here we have the stop code. And so we see here it says stop C5,
mm-hmm.
and then we have four different parameters.
Okay.
So this went through the exact same API, KE bug check. EX that I mentioned before that device drivers can actually call into.
Mm-hmm.
So the system actually went and called that API itself. And so it passed in C5 as the stop code and actually passed in these four parameters. Now what we can do is, before we actually even start to look at more about the system,
sure.
with the debugging tools that are available, so we have debugging tools for Windows. Mm-hmm. So with that, there's an excellent help file which contains a lot of this data.
Okay.
So we can get that from Microsoft.com/WHDC. And so it's a free download.
Okay.
And so what I do, I have the the help file here. And so we can get a little bit more information, so I'll just go and open it up. And so we just browse down. We're looking under debugging techniques. And then you see we have bug checks. And then just below that, we have this bug check code reference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we'll just scroll down. And you see here we have a list of all the different types of bug checks that are available on the Windows. So not all of these you'll see in a retail build.
Sure.
So a lot of these are only if you have a checked build.
And walk through somebody that may not be familiar with what the difference is between a checked build and a regular build of Windows.
Okay, so basically when we ship Windows, we compile Windows twice.
Okay.
So the first one is the retail build, mm-hmm. which is a build that all the customers get access to.
Yeah.
And so basically it has all the optimizations turned on, very little tracing code disabled inside the product.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also what's known as a debug build, or the check build. And so we make this available to MSDN subscribers.
Okay.
And so what this is it has a whole bunch of like optimizations turned off, and also has a lot more like different checks. So all the asserts and things like that are turned on. So there's a lot more checks that go on inside the operating system and things like that, and we can do a lot more checks on devices and things like that. So we won't actually find some of these until we actually turn the check build on.
Okay, so in the retail build, if somebody's trying to debug retail, what advice would you give them? Because it sounds like in checked version, you'll be able to get a lot more errors. Is it hey, try your application, see if you can get it to repro in a checked build, or... Well, or what sort of the tips on doing the production version versus checked version?
It depends on the type of problem.
Okay.
And so most of the time you're going to only need the retail build. And that's because we have a tool called Driver Verifier.
Yeah.
And what we'll do is we'll turn that on a little bit later in the second part of this. And so to actually help us try and diagnose the issue a little bit more.
Okay.
And so Driver Verifier, basically all it does is just turn on some flags inside the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kernel in the retail build has most of the common checks turned on. So one of the things, if we are shipping, or ISVs are shipping devices or device drivers for Windows,
mm-hmm.
one of the requirements is they actually go ahead and they use this driver verifier on the drivers for a certain amount of time. And this captures a lot of the common like problems. So we run this across all of our code.
Okay.
So that's how we ship the software's a lot more stable.
Got it.
Okay, so we'll just jump back to my VM. So we can see here that we have a stop code of C5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then we have those four parameters. So, just going to scroll up. And so what we'll do is we'll just look for C5, and we'll see here. And so we open that up, and so it says a bug check of C5, and it says the driver corrupted EX port. Okay, and so then we see what these parameters mean. So each bug check has a different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it tells us the parameters. So one of the things we can see here is that so the first parameter is the memory that's been referenced. Okay. And so one of the things the help file does is it documents some of the possible causes and different ways that we can go ahead and we can resolve the problem. So one of the things that's important here, as we can see here, is to debug this error, use special tool option of the driver verifier. So that's the tool I was talking about.
Okay.
Okay. So if we went around to actually see this machine bug check,
mm-hmm.
what Windows does, Windows actually leaves some data on the disk. We actually go back and we can analyze that. So at the moment, my machine's like stopped there, and that's because I turned off the automatic restart option. So by default, this is enabled. The reason I turned it off is just so we can actually stop there and we can have a look at the screen.
Sure,
for a short period. So normally you'll see down the bottom here. This I mentioned the evidence is written down.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see here it says beginning a dump of physical memory. And so what Windows has done is, depending on the different options, we could actually go and write out a complete dump, which would be the full contents of memory. Or we can actually go back and we could just write, say, like a kernel dump,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot less, which is just the amount of memory the kernel uses.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could configure the system to go and write a mini dump, which is just 64K. So we have different options to be able to go and flush out this memory. So we can use that.
When should I use which? Is it start small and move your way up, assuming you can't find the problem? Or what's kind of the right way to choose between those options?
So normally we recommend the default option, which is kernel memory.
Okay.
And that's because, as I said, that it's blue screens are because of kernel mode problems,
mm-hmm.
not because of user mode problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need all that user mode address space. We're only interested in things that are happening in kernel mode. It only comes when we're actually trying to diagnose interaction between user mode applications that we'll go ahead and we'll request those.
Okay.
One of the things we do, though, is if you have more than 2 gigabytes of memory in the box, we'll actually go and disable the option for you to go and do a complete dump, just because there's no point in actually going dumping that much memory because of the time it takes to actually go ahead and do all that.
Sure, sure.
So
you can actually dumping 2 disks, so that would be writing 2 gigs of memory to disk.
Yeah, so what happens is when the system goes through and it bug checks, it actually takes all that data and flushes it into the page file.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually used as a temporary store. So one of the requirements is that if you did say, for example, you had 2 gigabytes of memory and you'd gone ahead and you modified this registry key to go and to dump all the 2 gigs of data, you'd need to have a page file that's 2 gigabytes in size or larger to accommodate mm-hmm. all of that data. So it also depends on how much disk space you have as well.
But right.
In a regular system, we recommend to go ahead and do a kernel, and that's purely because we're interested in the kernel memory. So for a box that has several gigabytes of memory, we could get a dump file, say, hundreds of megabytes.
Sure, sure.
Even less. And those zip up really well as well, so it's easy to send those around for analysis and things like that.
Okay.
One of the things that happens as well is if you should go ahead and choose either kernel or complete, you get a mini dump for free, basically.
Okay.
And so these mini dumps are 64K in size, so they're very, very easy to mail around.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't contain a lot of information. They just can basically contain the stack. So what instructions we're executing last, so we actually see the code flow, and also mm-hmm. get a list of the loaded drivers, so we can actually find out a little bit what's happening on the system.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go ahead and I'm just going to go restart the VM now. And so that's my system's just going to boot up normally. And so when we actually get to the Windows screen, this will take a little bit of time.
Yeah, that'll start booting up.
Yeah, so once we get there, it'll actually go ahead, and when we log on, we'll get a prompt actually notify us to tell us that a bug check has occurred.
Okay.
And then we'll also have the ability to actually go ahead, and if we choose to do so, we can send that data, which will be sent to Microsoft. As I said, that ends up in that pool that we have, which is the OCA, Online Crash Analysis.
Right.
Where we do all the automated analysis of all these bug checks that come in.
Yeah, so one of the things to talk about is for ISVs is how they can actually set up so that they can get their own bug checks. So even using the same OCA, a company, once you walk through that process, can get their dumps.
Yeah, so we have a process called WinQual, and so there's a website we have, winqual.microsoft.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so ISVs and OEMs can go and register.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they can do is basically if they have a certificate that they use to sign their drivers, they can use that certificate to register for the website, and then that data is available to them for free. So they'll get a list of all the various, not only for user for kernel mode, but also for user mode. So they can get a list of all their applications and their drivers and percentage of like crashes and things like that, and different types. Like in different, if they have different drivers across different products, so it's very very useful. In us reaching out to the ISV community to make Windows a more stable platform.
And when you talked about it's not just for a kernel, this means any application that happens to crash, say if a third party was building their an Office clone, if you will, and they wanted to sign up for this information, they couldn't actually see their application crashes. So it's not just for a kernel. Is that accurate?
Sure, yeah. So we have it goes to different websites, but mm-hmm. effectively the ISV can go there and actually get the data for both of those.
Awesome.
Okay. So my system's come back up normally again, and so what it's wanting to do is for me to log in. So just control or delete and to log in. And so we'll see here we have the shutdown event tracker. So it's actually told me that I'm the first user to log in, or the first administrator to log into the system. So it tells me that there was a fatal system error, so we have a stop error. And again, we have those stop codes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's actually, if I wasn't there to see it, and I come and log in, I can actually, there's some kind of prompt. That's what's actually going ahead.
I see that same information. Now, is this using this is because we're using a checked version, or?
No, so this is in the retail build.
This is retail,
so all of this
okay.
is in retail build.
Perfect.
Okay, so just go ahead and I'll click OK. And so we log in normally, and so what we'll see shortly is we'll actually see the data, or the prompt to send the report to Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So what's actually happening now is a program called savedump.exe has been kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
So WinLogon has gone and determined that there's actually data in the page file that contains a crash dump. So it's gone and spawned the process called savedump.exe.
Mm-hmm.
And savedump basically goes and reads some information out of the registry and determines what to do. And so at the moment, it's actually the default option is to go and store a crash dump or memory dump into the Windows directory in a file called memory.dmp.
Okay.
So one of the things savedump is doing is actually going ahead and streaming that data out of the page file and writing it into that file.
And that's what it's doing now.
That's correct. Okay. So what I can do is the debugging tools. Now, normally what we'll do is, you don't need to install these in a production environment, mm-hmm. on the actual server. You can just go ahead and just copy that dump file off and do your analysis all on a single machine.
Mm-hmm.
I have the debugging tools installed here, just easy to get to the dump file. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the debugging tools for Windows. And it's going to use a tool called WinDBG, which is basically just a graphical interface. So we have a command line version as well you could use, like kde.exe. So they're basically just front ends that use the same engine. So both of these commands you use in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Talk back to this engine. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to say, okay, open up Crash Dump. I'm just going to go browse to my Windows directory. And you see that we have a file there called memory.dmp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and just click open. So the system actually goes ahead. There's a bit of data that we write in the front of the header file, and so it actually tells me some information about the system. So I can see that we're using kernel address space only, so I have the kernel option enabled. I don't have complete.
Sure.
And we also have some build information, so we can see I'm running Windows 2003. I can see the build number there. I can see the service pack level is 2. I can also see UP, so for a uniprocessor build, so just running on a single processor here. Mm-hmm. And then free, so we're talking the difference between checked and retail. Free is another word for retail. Mm-hmm. So I can tell if I'm running a debug build or if I'm running the retail build. I can also see the architecture, so I can see it's an x86 compatible.
Okay.
So it could be Itanium or it could be an x64. And then we see some information here about, for example, like the time that the bug check happened and how long the system had been up for. So we can see here, we can also get some reliability statistics. So you have this. When we have a look at this, we have some idea about what's been going on, the health of the system.
Sure, sure.
So one of the first things it actually does, it goes ahead and says, okay, we have this command here called bang analyze. So this is a markup language that we have built into the debuggers. And so what I can do is actually just go ahead and click on that. And what this does is it goes ahead and checks the type of bug check and then goes ahead and tries to do some kind of performance based on that. Okay. And so this engine is the exact same engine that when you upload the dumps to Microsoft, it actually goes through... does the same kind of analysis, so the same piece of code runs. So we can actually go and get mine those statistics out of that.
So this did a bunch of stuff. What did it actually do?
All right, so I'm just going to scroll up to the top again so we can see that. So one of the things you see here, the very first thing it does is it goes and dumps out the bug code. And so you see there we have a C5, which mm-hmm. is what we saw in our memory dump.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same data that we saw in the debugging tools, where it says the driver corrupted pool, it's gone ahead and it's shown that to us. And it's shown us the arguments, and again, it's given us some indication of what we should try and do, possible causes, and then also some kind of solution or some kind of troubleshooting that we can do and try and diagnose this issue. So again, it talks about using a special pool or using a driver verifier. If we scroll down a little bit further, what we can see is some information where we actually have different buckets that we break these up into, so we give these different IDs, mm-hmm. so we know about the different types. So not only based on what the driver was, but also whereabouts it was executing, like in which piece of code. So we can tie up, say, for example, we had one driver that was doing two different types of bug checks, we can distinguish between those two. Okay. And so the information we've seen here is gone and dumped out basically what was happening at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see here we have a list of all the registers in the CPU. And if we scroll down a little bit further, then we can see that we have some code that was running through NTFS driver, and then basically called into the kernel. And so what was happening here was NTFS, which is the file system driver for the NT file system,
sure.
was basically going through into the cache manager, and then it was actually going and asking, allocating some pool. So the cache manager needed some of this memory to perform some kind of internal function.
Okay.
So what we can see here is it went ahead and allocated the pool and then the system bug checked. Okay. So at first look, we would suspect that, okay, there's something wrong with the cache manager because that's what it's pointing to.
Of course, it's Microsoft.
Yeah, well, this is a pretty pretty stable bit of code. And it gets a lot of testing. And so we're going to suspect, okay, that's probably not the cause. What we could mm-hmm. do, we could have a look and we could look through the knowledge base article, like through the support.microsoft.com and look through the KB articles there and see if there's anything that tries to match that.
Sure.
But we've already seen from the bug check code that it actually talks about that there's some kind of pool corruption. So we basically start to suspect that this data here, that we can't trust this, that something else has gone wrong.
Okay.
Okay. So without a lot of poking around, there's not much point. We know there's some kind of corruption, so we need to try and troubleshoot that. Okay. So what it's going to say here is that we should actually go ahead and we should actually use this tool called Driver Verifier.
Okay.
So we'll shut that down. So we're done with the analysis of that. We need to go ahead and we need to perform these additional steps. So I'm just going to go ahead and load this so my driver actually gets loaded. And then what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go run this tool. It's called Verifier. And so this was introduced in Windows 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no shortcut for it. But you can just run it from a command prompt. And so we basically have some default options here that we can go ahead. It's just a wizard-like interface. So I'm just going to go ahead and I'm just going to select create custom settings for code developers. So we'll step through this and we'll have a look at exactly what options we're going to enable. So we have some standard settings that we could use, or we go ahead and we'll say, okay, I'll select some individual settings from a list. So the option I was talking about from the debugger and also the help files, you should actually enable this option called special port. And so I'll go ahead and enable this. And while we wait for the system to restart, I actually explain a little bit more about...
Sure. So what is enabling that doing?
So what this will do is actually go and write some information into the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And so next time Windows like restarts, the kernel will actually go and read that data out and actually turn on special flags. So it'll actually perform differently depending on which options we check.
Okay.
Okay. So this special pull option, you'll see a little bit more detail when we select what we're doing. You know, we talk about on the board what it is. So the option here now is we can actually go ahead and we can say, okay, select all unsigned drivers. Okay. So that's one common problem, is if drivers aren't signed, they probably haven't gone through as much testing. So there's the potential for a lot more bugs in those types of devices. So we have that as an option there. We also have an option there for detect for older versions of Windows. So it's not uncommon that you could have a customer that has a system running Windows 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Has a device driver that was written for Windows 2000. They've gone and upgraded the system to 2003, and that device driver might not be compatible with
Windows 2003. Okay, so they're using an old driver, if you will.
Correct. So we can go ahead and we can just quickly do a scan and find out from the file date, so, okay, this driver is quite old, and maybe it's a candidate for going through this additional checking.
Okay.
We have the option, of course, we can go through and turn on all of these. Now, it's not recommended to go and turn this on across all drivers,
mm-hmm.
Because there is a potential that the system won't boot.
Interesting. Okay.
Because, say, for example, we expose a bug in a device driver extremely early in the boot process. It could be that you're stuck in a loop. In that case, you'll need to use Recovery Console or one of those recovery tools, especially going to back these changes out of the registry,
mm-hmm.
So you can have the system start correctly. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to say, I'll just go select unsigned drivers. And so we'll just go ahead and we'll scan that. And so now we've actually just got a list of all the device drivers are loaded in memory, and we're actually going and checking if a certificate has been used to sign each of these.
Okay.
And so we come back with two checks here, so two devices that are suspect. So the first one is a bugcheck.sys.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a description for that. And then the second one here is for one of the virtual machine editions that I'm using inside the VM. So I'm just going to go ahead and say yes to those. I'm just going to finish that. And it says I need to go ahead and reboot. So I'm just going to click OK. And I'll just shut down and I'll just restart my system. Okay. And we'll let that happen normally. So again, like this is all on the retail build.
Right.
So, and these tools are available on Windows 2000, 2003, 2008, and also on XP and Vista as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So essentially what we're doing, if we go back to the issue we had here with the page. So, what happens now is, this doesn't happen for all devices. We went through and we said, okay, we specifically, in this example, we chose those two device drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So if A or B weren't in that list and they went ahead and asked for pull memory, they'll be given the exact same, they'll go through the exact same process. If the bugcheck.sys or the virtual machine driver comes along and says, okay, I want to make an allocation, what actually happens is we use what's known as special pull.
Okay.
And so that's a different region of memory that we use especially for this technique.
And this is because we flagged them in that tool, and on the restart, it's going to go, these two, if they ask for anything, are going to go to special pool.
Correct. And so what happens here is the exact same thing, that the memory manager still works with these 4K pages. And so something additional happens, so what we do is we actually go ahead and we allocate another page as well. So at the end of that, we put another 4K page.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we go and mark this as read-only. Okay. And so what we do is, previously if we had 4K free, and we said, okay, we want to use 100 bytes,
mm-hmm.
we would actually get an allocation towards the top of the page.
Sure.
What actually happens with special pull is we actually step back and we work back and we say, okay, you've said you want to use 100 bytes. We'll step back from the bottom of this page, and we'll go here, and we'll say, okay, we'll give you this region here, especially to start your allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go ahead and I actually go and write 100 bytes, everything's going to be fine because it's going to fit into that, and we're not going to touch that page. If I go over that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be writing or attempting to write to a read-only page.
Sure.
And the kernel will detect that immediately, and we'll get a bug check straight away.
Perfect.
Okay. So we shouldn't have to go through the waiting for it to happen. We should actually see it happen on the very first go. Okay, so the system's back up again. So it's going to log back in again. So once I get my desktop, I'll just launch my application. So once this actually starts and the device actually loads, it's going to be running under special pool if it makes any allocations.
Sure.
So everything's fine if the drive actually goes ahead and at certain points it actually requests a certain amount and the and actually uses the right amount of data. It's only when we actually go ahead and try and do something illegal that we'll capture that. Okay, it's just taking a second to start up.
So while that's loading, here it goes.
That's right. Just run that again. Okay.
Okay.
So the tool's now running, and so the device drive is loaded again. And so I haven't actually gone ahead and made any allocations yet.
Yeah, I haven't pressed the button.
All right. So what I'm going to do is, we saw previously it took me several attempts to actually get it to happen.
Sure.
If I go ahead now, I just hit corrupt. And you'll see the system immediately bug checks.
Okay.
And what we'll see this time is we actually see a different type of bug check. So you see the information has changed, and so we actually have a different stop code this time. So this time it says it's a D6, and you see we have some different parameters. But one of the things that's been done is you see at the very top of the system has actually said bugcheck.sys. Okay, so Windows has been able to identify.
We now know which file is actually causing the blue screen.
Correct. So we've actually gone and found out which device driver was that's actually causing that. So we actually turned it on for unsigned drivers, and we found out that bugcheck.sys was the one that was actually doing it.
Awesome.
So it's gone ahead and done the exact same thing. It's gone and dumped out all the contents of memory to disk. And so we have that evidence there again. So if we weren't there to see that bug check, we could actually do the exact same steps.
Mm-hmm.
Take that bug check, open it in the debugging tools, run the bang analyze command, and actually go ahead and tell us again that bugcheck.sys was the cause of that. So then the step for the user would be to then work with the ISV to work on that problem, to diagnose that problem.
Yeah, so so now we have this stuff. Are there any things in particular that a developer could look at for helping diagnose or looking at their code to making sure that their allocations are right, or static analysis or anything? So now we know the problem, and assuming you were working with, say, the ISV that actually wrote bugcheck.sys, what's the advice that you would give them for one, cleaning their code, and two, sort of the good hygiene, if you will, in terms of memory and kernel management?
All right, so with this bug check, it should be fairly clear from looking at the dump, like what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it was not a problem that was known to ISV, they'd need to work with the customer to actually go ahead and to request that memory dump.
Mm-hmm.
So they could get that from the customer and open that up using the WinDBG or KD, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those support source-level debugging.
Mm-hmm.
So if the developer has the right symbols and the right source, basically when they open this up, it should pinpoint exactly to where the allocation was made.
So can they actually step through the allocation in Windows and see things being allocated in
They can't step through it because it's like it's static. So basically, we just dump all the state. So there's no way to be able to do that. But depending on the type of dump you have, so if you have a kernel dump,
mm-hmm.
you can have a look at all these kernel structures. So you can look at all the different types of memory that your device is allocated. So one of the things that when we go ahead and we make these allocations is one of the APIs we have is we have EX allocate pool with tag. And so we recommend that all ISVs use a unique tag. So we use that, and we document in the debugging tools. So there's actually a file there called pooltag.txt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells you whereabouts in the operating system, and also like which device, if it's outside of the kernel. and it also gives it a unique four character tag. So we can actually tie that down so we know, you know, which ones come from NTFS or which ones come from the object manager and things like that, so we can find out what these tags are. So if you
now is an ISV creating those tags?
So we have guidelines that ISVs should use.
Okay.
And so we have tags that are reserved for ourselves. And if you don't go ahead and use tags, you actually get the defaults. So we do still see a lot of ISVs who are just using the old tags, or they're using old APIs which use these default tags. So mm-hmm. we still see a lot of problems where we see dumps and it has a tag DDK. So those are tags that haven't been assigned. So it does make it a little bit difficult. And also for ISVs, it makes it more difficult for them to try and find out whereabouts inside their driver. Their driver could be extremely large and could perform a lot of different routines. So if they actually use different tags for different parts of the driver, it makes it a lot easier to try and troubleshoot to pinpoint exactly which part of the code you're looking at.
Okay, cool.
And we have code analysis tools that ship with the DDK as well that we recommend that ISVs run over the top.
So what are some of the things those tools do or other tools that you would say people should be running? So obviously sort of the meta tagging, metadata about their drivers, but what about some of the other
tools?
So
we have tools like PrettyFast, for example, which just do analysis of the code and look at various common problems and things like that, and they'll offer recommendations. So we recommend that ISVs do that. And also when they're testing their drivers, to actually go ahead and run with driver verifier on.
Okay.
So one of the tests you might have seen in there was that we actually have a test for low resource conditions. So a lot of times drivers are fine, but what actually happens is a device could actually go ahead and ask for memory, and the system's not able to fulfill that because it's run out of memory for some reason. And so devices should be able to handle that condition. So what we found is before we start putting these checks in, a lot of devices would actually crash. And so they go ahead and they crash the whole system.
Sure.
When they shouldn't be able to do that, they should write to the event log and say that they couldn't allocate things like that.
Yeah, fault tolerance.
Yeah, so we have the ability there to actually go ahead with driver verifier instead of having to try and build up a massive test harness where you leak memory on a box and get to this condition. We
just,
can just
keep looping through opening IE and Outlook until, you know.
or we need to have, devices that are running in kernel mode to actually...
Oh, that's true, that's true.
So yeah. Even though opening up IE and that will use up kernel resources, you'll need to open a lot more of them.
Sure.
So, yeah. But so we do have that available, so you can actually go through and use
it. And how does that work? Is it just, it literally... are you telling the pool to stop allocating? Are you cloning it? Or are you actually assigning memory to everything?
We just randomly go through and just return error conditions. So when the driver goes ahead and requests pull, we'll just go back and we'll just return with an error. And say that there wasn't enough system.
So it's not actually taking all the memory from the machine to do
it.
No,
it's not. It's just failing the request.
Right. So, and see how the driver handles that error condition.
We have options that are available that you can put inside the boot options. So like in boot INI, or if you're using like Vista 2008 with BCD edit, you can go through and actually tell it to burn through memory. So say, for example, you had 4 gigabytes of physical memory in the box, you could actually go and tell it to use up 3 gig of that, so it actually will only present 1 gig to the operating system. So say, for example, you needed to get a complete dump for some reason, and it was extremely difficult trying to dump a box that had 32 gig of memory. You could go ahead and say, okay, with this burn mem option, you can go ahead and say, okay, just use 2 gigabytes of memory, and then you can get your complete dump. It goes and dumps 2 gig, you reproduce your problem, and then you can actually take that option out and have it boot back up and use the full 32 gig box, 32 gigs in the box or whatever.
Awesome. Cool. Now, when something's actually found, we've seen update.microsoft.com adding more and more drivers, especially now as we're talking about Vista. How would, and even things like NVIDIA drivers, display drivers, how would an ISV get their driver into update.microsoft.com? Is that part of the Watson error crash, or how does somebody use that system to get updates using our update technology?
So if you have a look on the WinQual website, there's links there. So part of the, not only do the drivers need to be signed, but they need to go through the hardware quality labs. So we actually have a different system for that.
Okay.
And so once ISVs go through that, and they have all the proper checks in place, and they'll be able to go up on those sites. So part of running with the quality tested builds or that they've been signed is that they've gone through and they've gone through testing with Driver Verifier.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not a guarantee that it's not going to go ahead and cause problems with the system, but it is. There's more confidence that it's actually gone through a lot of testing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these common problems they're going to be found. So you're not going to see those kind of issues on customers' machines.
Okay. Cool. Cool. And how does the system itself, does it know when there's an update, especially when it's a third-party driver? Like, is it using that unique identifier character? Like, you know, we had bug check that custom sys file. How would I going to update on Microsoft.com? Does it specifically look at, and another one's been published through HQL, how would it know to do an update? Like, is there something that the developer of the driver needs to do, or is that on the Microsoft side where we sniff for that name of that driver?
So when you install the device, like, the device has a device ID.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so we actually use that. So, like, for example, when you're doing, like, a hardware scan, so each hardware device will have a unique ID.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's broken down into, like, basically part of its plug-and-play ID and things like that. So each device manufacturer has a reserved number that ties it back to that manufacturer, and mm-hmm. then they can use a certain number for that device. So
got
they're it. Able to tie them back that way.
Okay, cool. Good stuff. You got more stuff to show us, or...?
I don't know. What do you guys want to look at?
Can you show us anything in Visual Studio debugging Windows?
So I don't have Visual Studio installed on here.
Dun, dun, dun!
One of the problems for that is because it's such a large install. So when we're dealing with...
We've got C++ Express! Come on, that's 30 megs!
Yeah, when we're dealing with like production environments, mm-hmm. we want to make as little number of changes as possible.
Sure.
And so we basically require like lightweight tools. So we don't need to have like the debugging tools installed on the system, as I said, that we can just gather these dump files and take those off. So if you have like, you know, thousands of servers in your data center, you don't want to have to go and push this package out. You can just pull those dumps off there.
Cool.
So yeah. So you see here, this is now we have the ability to go through. So the system has recovered from a serious error. So
yeah.
I have the option to send...
Not that I've ever seen this.
So... We have the ability as well to actually report feedback to the user,
mm-hmm.
too. So if it's a known fix, and so either it's a problem with our code or it's a problem with ISV,
mm-hmm.
what we can actually do is we can actually push that data down to the customer.
Okay, so is that in the same processes that you've talked about before for setting yourself up with a cert for your application or
sure.
your...
So say, for example, so I was a vendor of bugcheck.sys.
Right.
And so I knew there was a problem with my driver, and I'd gone ahead and I'd corrected that.
Mm-hmm.
So I could feed that information back to Microsoft that I have a fix available,
mm-hmm.
and then Microsoft can then offer that information to the customer, and so they'll be basically given a URL which they can follow,
mm-hmm.
and they'll actually say, okay, it's a known problem, and then as a vendor I can actually post a URL to my fix, if it's not available on Windows Update, and so then the users can actually go pull down that fix and apply that to the system.
Cool.
So we have that. We have that as well. And the debuggers will report that as well. If it's a known fix, it'll actually, it can check against the database.
Awesome.
And send that data back as well.
Okay. I think that's everything we got. Unless you got more stuff to show us, any last tips and tricks for finding out the sleuthing of why Windows is crashing?
Basically, I mean, just going through the tools that I showed is you need to get that data, so you
mm-hmm.
need to make sure your system's set up correctly. I can just show you quickly as well, like, where those are, just if users aren't familiar with that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I just right-click on my computer and select Properties. And I just click on the Advanced tab. And so down the bottom here, we have this option for Startup and Recovery, so I just select the settings. And you'll see down the bottom here we have these three options here. If I click that down, I actually have the ability to do none as well. So if I don't want to write any information at all,
mm-hmm.
okay. So you see here that we have a small dump that says like 64K kernel memory and also complete. One of the things with kernel and complete as well is we only keep one copy of that dump around. Okay, so the system's bug checked twice now.
Mm-hmm.
There's only going to be one memory.dmp. It's only going to be the latest one. As I said, with the mini dumps, we do keep those around, and you do get those for free. So I just actually go and browse to my Windows directory. And in here we have a directory now that's been created called mini dump. And you see we actually have two mini dump files. Mm-hmm. And so these are stamped with the time and date.
And these are the files I can open with...
And you can open these with the debugger as well.
Right.
Okay. And so, as I said, these are 64K. These are a little bit larger, so you see they're like 67K.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is because we actually use 64K to go and dump the structures that we need, but we also contain some information, such as BIOS information and things like that. So if we find out there's problems with like different types of firmware and things like that, we can also read that information out of the dump. So we also work with hardware manufacturers as well, if there's any problems with... on CPU with like microcode and things like that, or specific BIOS revisions, so we can get all that data and work with them.
Cool. Awesome.
I can show you some user mode stuff if you want to have a like, quick look at some of the stuff we can do with the debuggers. With NVG. So I'll do all this in user mode. So what I'm going to do is I just go and fire up WinDVG. And I'm just going to go and run Notepad. So before we're looking at the dumps, because as I said, it's all static information, so we don't have the ability to step through it or change any of that.
Mm-hmm.
When we do like live debugging, we have the ability to do that with customers as well. So sometimes we can't always get the information we need from the dump.
Mm-hmm.
So we might need to go through and attach a kernel debugger. So there's various ways we can do that. So we can go ahead and we can use a serial cable. We have support for FireWire. We have support for USB. We also have limited support for local debugging as well, local kernel debugging.
Okay.
And we can also attach to virtual machines as well. So not only with our own products, but also with other virtual machine technology.
Oh, awesome.
So it's rather flexible. What I'm going to do here, though, is just attach to user mode process. So I'm just going to fire up Notepad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to switch back to my debugger. And from here, I have the ability to attach to the process.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to click OK. And it gives me a list of all the running processes on my system. So I'm going to click Notepad. And I just click OK. The debugger is going to attach, and we'll see a list of the loaded modules running inside that application. You'll see now if I try and actually activate that, I don't have the ability to do so. That's because we're broken in. So I just hit G, which is a command for go, and press enter.
And then we're able to get back?
I can get back. So my application is running normally.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing, as I said, because this is live, so we can step through it, but we also have the ability to go and change the behavior on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
So we can actually, not only can we read, but we can also write to the process. So, one example, if I have a click on Help and I click on About Notepad.
Sure.
So it throws up a dialog box. Okay. And so this is through the Shell About API. So this is exported from the Shell DLL, and we document this on MSDN. So basically it's a cheap and nasty way to be able to, or a quick and dirty way to be able to get an About dialog box without having to go and write a ton of code.
Sure.
So we use that in Notepad. We use it a lot in MS Paint, just like tiny applications that we ship with the operating system.
Of course.
Okay. So what I can do is actually go through and set a breakpoint on that. And so we actually start to make some changes. I'll switch back to my debugger, and I'll just break in. And I'll just use the breakpoint command, so BP. And then we need to type in the module. So in this case, it'll be Shell 32. If you look at the documentation on MSDN, it always tells you which module these APIs or which libraries. So the library name basically matches the API name.
Mm-hmm.
And shell about. Now I'm using W because this is Windows and it's built to use Unicode. So there's two versions. There's an ANSI version and a Unicode version. And so I want to set this because we use Unicode internally in Windows. So that's why any... functions that deal with strings, there'll be an ANSI version and a Unicode version. So that breakpoint's been set. Now I'm just going to go ahead and hit G. And so my application is alive again. And this time when I go click on Help About, it breaks. We don't get the dialog box. If I switch back to the debugger, as you see, similar information we saw inside the dump file. So we see a list of the registers. And I can also actually just go and execute some commands to actually find out how it is we got there. So if I go and use a KB command, which basically tells it to go and dump out the stack. So you can see a list of the code flow where we went through, so starting at the bottom and working the way up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can see we went through our win main in Notepad, and we basically dispatched some messages, and now we've gone through our message handler. Now we've gone and called the shell about command.
Okay, cool.
So if I go and look at the documentation for shell about, one of the things it tells me is it takes four parameters. Mm-hmm. So the first parameter is a handle to the window, the first parent, and the second parameter is actually the string that you want to appear in the dialog box.
Sure.
Okay. So we can actually see this information here. So we can see we have the return address, and then we have our first parameter, second parameter, third parameter. And the debugger just shows us, but there might not be any parameters, or there might be more. So we can actually go look at this this data a little bit more closely if we need to. But so, as I said, the documentation says that the second parameter is a pointer to that memory. So if I actually go and look at this, which is the second parameter, to shell about, I just use a DC command. So it's just basically dumping it out. You see it goes and dumps out representation over here in the bytes, or what it looks like, and we actually see an ASCII representation. So we can see the word here, notepad, and see we'll see it's padded. That's because we're using Unicode. So we can actually use a du command, which is dump Unicode. If I do that again, actually the debugger formats that, and it knows where the null is at the end of the string.
So ah, beautiful. Shows.
So what we actually see here is we're actually using some other text that would be part of like the could be part of the message table or resource strings or something like that.
Yeah. So if it was say resource strings that Notepad in German or something could need all that memory, for example.
Correct. Yeah. So that yeah. So we can have for different localizations and things like that. As I said, because this is live, I can actually go ahead and make some changes to this.
So we're going to rename this app?
That's right. So what I can do here is I'm just going to go through and I'm just going to use the F command, which is fill. And so I'm just going to basically fill this with zeros just to get it all out of the way so I can rewrite something else over the top. So I'm just going to say the address I want to use, and I'll say how much. So I'm saying 10 in hex, 16 bytes, which will be enough to fill that. And I'll just say the pattern I wish to use, which is zeros. So I enter that in, and it says it's gone and filled that number. So if I actually go and look back at that memory now, as you see, it's all changed. That has all become zeros.
Awesome.
Okay.
Now, you've shown a lot of these commands. Is this in the help file, or where would somebody find more reference for some of the shortcut commands that you're running here?
Yeah, so all these commands are documented in the help file. So
okay.
It's an excellent resource for people who are wanting to start out in debugging.
Mm-hmm.
Is get the tools, start reading through the help file, a lot of different examples about and different commands to use and things like that.
And run a virtual machine so you don't kill anything. Is that that?
Yeah, exactly. It's very very useful to do this kind of testing.
Awesome.
Okay, so now I have the ability to actually go ahead and write some data in there. So mm-hmm. Any of the E commands, and again, these, I could use EB for bytes, I could use ED for D words. Because I wish to use Unicode string, I'm going to use the DU equivalent, which is EU. So just put EU, and just type in the address that I want to write to. So again, the same address we're using.
Mm-hmm.
And we could put here Niners for channel 9.
Awesome.
Okay, so I go and enter that, and that's been successfully added. So I go and do the DC command, and you'll see now that we've gone from Notepad to blanked out, and we now actually have Niners there.
Awesome.
And so we have enough space left in here, so that's null terminated,
mm-hmm.
So everything should work. So I go ahead and just hit G again, as I was doing before. Run my application, if I switch back, you'll see at the top it says About Niners, and we'll see Microsoft Niners.
Oh, that's... I love it. Let's see if we can get a nice shot there. Awesome.
So these are different things we can do when we work with customers as well, is if we need to, we actually go ahead and instrument code on the fly to dump out certain parameters, or we can make modifications when we're trying to do any kind of analysis.
Awesome. Very cool stuff.
Cool.
Ah! There we go. Cool. Well, thank you for the time. I'm sure the Niners are going to love this.
All right. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks. Bye.